All right, so here's the deal. Things are changing fast in the tech world and the internet marketing world. And that's a big deal because you have to know which trends to stay on top of in order to market better, in order to acquire customers for cheap, and so you can run your business as efficiently as possible. Staying on top of all those trends is a pain in the butt, though. And so the folks at HubSpot have made this amazing report. It has a very official sounding name because it is a very official document. It's the 2024 State of Marketing Report. They've looked at millions, tens of millions of bits of data to find the top marketing trends that have the most immediate impact on your business. And so what HubSpot did was they surveyed over 1,400 marketing pros from across the world, and they looked at what are people using effectively, what's not working, more importantly, and they've been able to compile it in a really easy to read document. So if you want to learn ways how to optimize for social or how to boost engagement or how to strike the right balance between privacy but still being personal with your customers, go to HubSpot.com/state of marketing to get the free copy, or just Google HubSpot State of Marketing and it will come up. Check it out.
A big CEO of a huge media company that you know of told me this business will never make more than $2 million a year. And it wasn't until like 6 months ago where I was like, man, there's like a path to make literally $100 million a year in revenue.
All right, we are here with Sam Parr, the founder of The Hustle, the big daddy of the publisher of the podcast. How does it feel to have a podcast on your network now?
Well, I'm excited, and I hope people will like it. We have to wait and see the numbers first. That's what I'll be excited for most.
I know. All right. So for those who don't know, The Hustle is a daily newsletter. It goes out to about 1.5 million readers. Is that right? 1.5 million?
Yeah, we could say that.
And we're growing every morning, so people like to start their day with it. It's the way I think about it is like you get an email, and it tells you the news, and I like the way you describe it, which is it's like, you know, your no BS friend just explaining it to you. So it's a simple way to understand what's going on in the world without spending a whole lot of time doing the research yourself. It's like we did the research for you.
Yeah, as if Sam Parr, are going to tell you, Sean, the news each day.
Right. And because you spend 5 minutes on it in the morning, you save an hour of doing reading and research and finding out what's important yourself and what to make of it. And then, you know, you're at work, you're at the water cooler, and you sound smart.
Yes. And we have more stuff coming out, but that's our big thing now.
Okay. Yeah. And something that launched today, I believe, right?
A little beta launched yesterday.
Okay. All right. So we're going to get to that in a second. But let's start with the question we always start with. Sam Parr, how did you make your first million?
By starting and selling multiple companies, which the biggest one being a news operation that emails millions of people a month and tells them the news they need to know each morning.
All right. You said starting and selling multiple businesses. So different way of looking at it is, when did you know you wanted to make $1 million?
Not for a very long time. My mom and dad are entrepreneurs. I thought that that's just what you do to make a living. I didn't really think about money a lot other than I knew that I wanted to start businesses because that was like my hobby.
Like when you were a teenager, you mean?
Yeah. But then when I got older, only like a year or two or 3 years ago, did I realize that money was something that's nice to have a lot of, but it's like not as nice as I thought. So for years, I was just doing this because it was fun and exciting. And it just so happened, the output, the result was income.
Okay. Like a lot of people say that. They say, I'm not doing it for the money. The money is sort of a byproduct. And I like that. I think that is a great way of looking at it. But I also know you. You're my friend. You think about money a lot. You ask about money a lot. We talk about it.
But when I ran, I talk about it all the time. But I was a track and field athlete in college. I talked about that all the time, too. It was just whichever the career I have or the vocation that I have at the time, that's what I'm obsessed about. And so to me, money is, it's kind of like bench pressing 300 pounds. Once you get past a point which is lower than you think, it's not really that important to be able to bench 350 pounds, but it's just like you're obsessed with it.
Right.
Because you, as my buddy, can bench 400 pounds. So it's like, man, I want to beat you. I want to compete right. with you, and I want to compete with myself.
Gotcha. And when did you like first start doing business? Was this, you know, are you a kid?
Oh, I had a
lemonade stand type of thing.
I was selling stuff on eBay, track and field shoes, my old clothes. I would sell them on eBay, and then I would sell stuff on Craigslist.
And you were doing it because you came up with it yourself. You saw somebody else selling on eBay.
I came up with it myself, and I thought it was a really cool adventure. Mm. I have an addictive personality, and this was my adrenaline rush. I started YouTube channels that got millions and millions of views, like the first year, 2 or 3 years that YouTube existed, and that made money. And I just loved scheming.
What kind of channels?
So this was in 2009. I don't know how old YouTube was around then.
Yeah, I think YouTube started maybe 2004, 2005. But
so it was like the third or fourth year of YouTube in existence. And I noticed that when you would type in a certain phrase on YouTube, it would autofill. And I would just look at all the words that would be autofilling. And I'm almost embarrassed to say this, but I will. But if you typed in like street fights, it would be like street fights, and it would autofill with like black guy beats up white guy, right, or street fights, white guy fights black guy. And so I was kind of scammy, and I would create these videos with these clickbait titles, and the thumbnail would be the only image that existed. So it was a video with just – this is because YouTube didn't have that filter to, like, catch that.
So the video was nothing.
Yeah, it was nothing. But I can go and find it somehow, and it probably has 10 million views. And then I would charge bands money, $10, $50 a month, to have their music as the background.
And so you didn't even have a fight, because I used to search for these. I used to watch Kimbo Slice.
Yeah, the same the same stuff, like street fight, like big black guy knocks out little white guy. Right. I have a video that's titled that has 5 million views. And don't you remember on YouTube years and years ago when you would click these certain videos and you'd hear these horrible electronic like music?
Yes.
So those people paid me money to put my ads or put their music on the background.
And so how old are you when this is going on?
I was a senior and freshman in college. Okay. So like it was like sometime around 2008. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you started the kind of keyword.
Yeah.
Keyword arbitrage. Because since then, I actually learned this from you. I went to one of your workshops that you and Neville did. And for those who don't know, Neville is a good buddy of yours.
Neville's the best man at my wedding. He's one of my best friends. Yeah.
And he's kind of famous for this copywriting course, right? So talk a little bit about that, because I think this is something that's extremely underrated. I added it to my arsenal.
Copywriting is the most important skill set anyone can have, because copywriting is not writing. Copywriting is understanding how other people think and feel and how to use words to get them to do what you want them to do. Specifically, the written word, but it can translate to anything.
Right. Copywriting is sales. Copywriting is persuasion. Copywriting is...
It's meeting a girlfriend. It's talking to a friend and trying to let them know you care about them. It's trying to sell something. It's just the idea of understanding other people's perspective and then trying to figure out if you could solve that or empathize with that and communicating that you have the tool to fix their problem.
Mm. Okay, so perfect example. The first business that I knew that you did, I didn't know about the YouTube street fights. I didn't know about the eBay stuff. But I did know about the hot dog stand.
And, yeah, Southern Sam's.
The name of the hot dog stand is not just Southern Sam's. what's the slogan?
It's Southern Sam's Wieners as Big as a Baby's Arm. So a hot dog is a commodity. Like, they pretty much are all the same. I mean, little variants, but I bought them Vienna sausages, which a lot of people buy. And it was like, how do you just stick out? How do you stand out? And I thought that would be a funny slogan. And the idea was, if a parent put their baby's arms in one of my buns and we put mustard on it and we take a photo, they get a free thing, a free sausage. And that was like the shtick. And
was this like pre-social media?
This was in 2010 to 2012, so okay. It was around. But if Instagram was around, it was barely around.
Okay, so we got Southern Sam's Wieners as Big as Your Baby's Arm.
Yeah,
the best name. I started a restaurant too, but it had nowhere near the sort of the fame or appeal as that. So I love that. How did it do?
So I just tweeted about this today, actually, because someone would ask me if I had to make money today with $1,000. I started it with $500. I was only able to afford the first day's ingredients. And the first day, it did okay, but it took me about a week to get a $1,000 day with like 50% margins. Most days, I would make between 100 and 500 days. If I would go and work all night or go to a concert, I could make $1,000 to $5,000 a night. It was really hard work. In Nashville in the summer, it's 110 degrees some days. Mm. It was horrible. It was really hard, but it was really fun. But it paid. Like, I got paid.
And you were the one manning the stand?
For a long time. And in the beginning, I was there all the time. But then I hired friends. My friend Carly, my friend Rydell. I would give them an hourly, like a minimum wage.
You know, I was thinking on my way over here, I was like, what should I say in the intro? And I was thinking, I was like, oh, well, what do I really believe? Because when I started doing this podcast, the beginning I would do like a radio host intro, which is not me. It's me playing like a radio host. Like, hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Yeah, doing what you think you should do.
Fantastic. Yeah. And now I'm like, well, what would I actually say about you? Like, if I was just explaining this to myself, what would I say? And I was like, the thing about you is if this was Lord of the Flies, I haven't even read the book, but I understand the premise. We all get dropped on an island and sort of we're all starting from scratch, just us and our bare hands. If you took everybody I know in San Francisco, a lot of great entrepreneurs, investors, successful people, but if you put us all on an island and it was like, here's a race to $10,000, I think you'd win.
Oh, thanks.
I think you'd win the $1,000 Lord of the Flies Silicon Valley edition. And so the hot dog stand is like the perfect example of this, which is just like, very straightforward, fundamental thinking. I have this much money. I want to get my money back quick. What do people want? What do people need? Where should I stand? Oh, I should go to the concert. That's where people, you know, are drinking and want a bite to eat. And just doing the basics and not trying to be sort of the genius inventor. Is that a good characterization? Because that's my mental model of you. Is that how you see it too?
100%. So I'm from Missouri. I'm from St. Louis, Missouri. A lot of people think I grew up as a hick. I kind of did, but I grew up in a city. Mm-hmm. My parents started a fruit stand that eventually became a produce brokerage. My father's not educated. I was not that good of a student. I was just like a redneck like kid, right? And so I just did whatever, and I will do whatever. It just so happened that I learned how to use the internet. So I would say I'm basically like a Midwestern small business owner that just learned how to use the internet.
Right. The internet is your corner instead of your neighborhood corner.
Right. Versus like this idea, like the Mark Zuckerbergs, I don't understand how they think. I'm much simpler.
Right. And so when you're doing the hot dog stand, hilarious name, good results, you know, paid the bills for a period of time. At some point, you jumped onto the internet.
Yeah.
Because the hot dog stand was more like the kid in Missouri, and the stuff you do today is a lot more like the kid in San Francisco.
Yeah, and so what I was doing in the evenings after selling stuff, so I worked for this guy named Mike Wolf. Have I told you this?
No.
Have you seen this TV show, American Pickers?
Yeah.
Mike Wolf was my boss. So when I was in college, I loved that TV show, American Pickers. I saw him walking down the street. I thought he was cool. I was a huge fan. And I walked up to get my photo taken with him. And I just became friends with him. And he asked me to run his store in Nashville or to work there and help set his shop up. And so I did.
Okay, hold on. Pause. I went up to him to ask to take a photo with him, and I became friends with him. This is a Sam Parr thing that you do, and I want the people listening to know how the hell you do it, because that's how we became friends. You literally emailed me being like, hey, Sean, heard great things about you. You had never heard anything about me.
I heard
things about you. Probably not. We had never met. The point is, you just reached out cold, and you were like, hey, I got this big dinner I need to host for like 80 people. like next week, can I borrow your office for free? It's going to have all these awesome speakers. You're going to love it. You can attend the dinner. And I was like, yeah, sure. And we became really good friends since then. And so you have this gift of befriending people kind of out of the blue. So tell me, what actually happened when you met him on the street?
I call it the gift of gab.
Okay.
That's what my parents called it growing up. Let's see. I had my dog, Sid, with me. Mike's a big dog guy. I walked up to him, asked for a photo. He started talking about my dog. I go, oh, yeah, thank you, like, yada yada dog stuff. And I'm like, by the way, what are you doing here? Oh, I'm opening up this shop. Amazing. Who's going to run it? I'm still looking. Mike, I'm your guy. I know we just met, but I'm your guy. Like, let me do this. And I probably said it in that exact tone. Right. And he was like, yeah, like, I don't know, maybe. And I just started heckling him and just, like, joking with him a little bit. And he's like, yeah, okay, well, here's my wife's number. Call her.
Right.
And so I called her, and then I found out that the place that I met him at, it was a jeans store, and I like jeans a lot. And we used to go to the same store. The next day, I went into the jeans store, and there was a guy who worked there named Matt. And I go, Matt, Mike Wolf was here the other day. When's he coming back? And he goes, well, he's got some clothes that he's got to pick up tomorrow. So I go, okay, here's $50. Text me when you think he's going to come in tomorrow. I'm going to show up. And so he did that, and I just waited on the couch for him. And I go, Mike, what's up, man? Look, here's the deal. Let me run this thing. or let me help you set it up. He goes, all right, fine, you're it. And right. That's how it happened.
Right. At that point, he's like, okay, it's going to take more effort to get rid of this kid than to just give him what he wants.
Yeah. So that's kind of how that happened. But anyway, while working there, I met all these amazing people because Mike's a celebrity and he would get all these cool people coming in. And Kid Rock's manager or something like that came in and I started just messing around and talking to him. He said that there's this new law that allows small-time distillers in Tennessee to create whiskey in the same way that in the 90s craft beer was allowed to be created. And I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And because I worked at Mike Wolff's store, I knew that Americana and vintage stuff was really popular, and right. Moonshine is Americana vintage, all this kind of
it was a trend. Shout out to
we had this new product trends. Coming out called Trends. But it was Moonshine was popular, and there's all these Moonshiner shows, and it was basically Moonshine means illegal whiskey. This whiskey that the Kid Rock's guy told me about, it was called Popcorn Suttons. It's illegal. They could sell it in stores, but they only would make it in small batches. And so what I did was I created an online store called Moonshine Online, and I would try to get customers from all over, places that weren't the South, that weren't used to this novelty whiskey, and I started selling it online.
Wow. And how was it doing? I mean,
it was awesome.
Do I even need to ask? We sold alcohol online. Probably did pretty well.
Yeah, I would be in finance class, and I had PayPal on. I don't even know if I had an iPhone, but it'd go ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. And I said to my finance teacher, I'm like, I just made $1,000 while I was sitting here in class. What do I do?
Right.
And so it was good. It was making.
What did they say?
They're like, well, he was like, you need to talk to a lawyer because I don't know if what you're doing is legal. So I talked to a lawyer and they're like, yeah, you're kind of breaking some laws here. So the Moonshine Online didn't last long.
Okay. So the BlackBerry with PayPal installed had to go quiet for a bit.
Yeah. And so he was like, you got to jump through all these hoops. And I was like, okay, well, I don't know if I want to do that. But I Googled where in the country do internet companies live? And online, it said San Francisco. So I emailed the founders of Airbnb. I asked for a job. They said, can you come to our office next week? I was like, yeah, I'm here already. And so I bought a ticket and flew out here. I interviewed there. But while I was here, I met a really cool guy named John Havel. And he had started a business because I stayed on his Airbnb. That's how I met him.
Gotcha.
And I was like, this is so cool. There's people my age doing cool stuff. I'm coming out here. Right. And so I went back home a few days later, sold the limited possessions that I had, left school, and I moved out here. And we started Bunk, a roommate matching app that was sold after 10 months for a tiny amount of money. And then I started my current company.
And how important was it to get out here? What happens if you don't move? Because there's a lot of people right now.
Nothing would have happened.
Nothing would have happened differently, or nothing would have happened at all?
I would not be where I am.
What would you be doing?
Working at hot dog stands, or started a lawn company, or...
Was it obvious to you and others at the time, when you were saying, hey, I'm going to go out to San Francisco, it seems like that's where the internet
is? It was not. I told my mom about Airbnb, and at the time, 300 people or 200 people worked there, so it wasn't small, but it wasn't well-known, and she was like... Is this a scam? Right. What is this Airbnb thing? You stay at other people's homes? I was like, yeah, there's another company called UberCab. And it's kind of like that, but with cars. And she's like, what are you talking about? Do they offer health insurance? That's all I care about. And I was like, I'm doing this, guys. I'm doing this. And they gave me, I sold my car. That gave me $5,000. And then they gave me $1,000 I hadn't graduated college yet, but as my graduation gift. And they go, all right, come, we'll help you do it. And I gave me a grand, and I moved out here. And so they supported me, but they didn't know what I was getting into.
You don't even know this. Our stories are so – they're very different, but they're parallel tracks. Everything you're saying, I literally had a moment like that in my life, which it's for another day because I want to – this is your story. But
having supportive parents is a really unfair advantage.
Absolutely. Also, having a level of you got to have a little fuck it in your system, and you had enough fuck it to say, all right, I'm just going to go out there. I don't know. I don't have the whole thing figured out. I'm going to go and I'm going to figure it out. I know enough that that's where I need to be. Tony Robbins has this really good phrase I like, which he says, proximity is power, which is just if you know nothing else, just get close.
That's cool.
To the stuff you like. Get close to the people you like. Just hang with them more. The proximity has its own power. Go to the place you want. Just be near it. Proximity is power. And I've seen that play out many times for myself. Your story reminds me of that.
Well, the thing is that you and I both have a lot of buddies that are really wealthy. Their children probably aren't going to be willing to take a lot of risks because when you grow up wealthy, you kind of know what there's to lose and all this stuff. But the way I grew up, like, I was a little bit of a wild man, and like sometimes I would get kicked out of my house and I would literally sleep outside.
Yeah.
So it's like the worst case scenario is like I just sleep outside. It's like this is no big deal. Or the worst case scenario is I go and like sell bottled water on the corner. Like I can make it work. Like the downside is really, really low.
Yeah.
Or the worst case is I call my mom and be like, hey, I don't ever want you to support me, but like, can you give me like $300 so I can get, right. I can just come stay in my room.
Yeah. There's a get out of jail free card. Did you ever, you know, I remember when I was doing my very first startup, I was living in Colorado, kind of a similar situation. I won't do the whole backstory, but I got into a spot where we had won 30 grand of just prize money because I would just go pitch in these business plan competitions. And
that's
I was
amazing.
Good at pitching. And so I would just win the business plan competition. So we rolled up 30 grand in like a month of prize money. And then my dad was also like, okay, if you're going to do this, not going to go to med school. I took the MCATs. He's like, if you're not going to go, let's take, you know, some of that tuition. And he gave me like, I don't remember, it was 20 grand or something like that. He's like, that's going to last you the year. So I got 30 grand from this, 20 grand from this. And there's me and two co-founders.
That's like such a good dad.
Oh, yeah. It was huge. And he was not even trying to be helpful. He was like, you've been so lazy your whole life that like I finally see you switched on. I think this is a terrible idea. You're doing a sushi restaurant. Like, that's a terrible idea.
But it's your tuition.
But yeah, but you're actually waking up and doing something every day without anyone telling you to do it. And he, you know, he gave me this line that's in life, it's a lot more about motion than it is direction. So, you know, imagine you're on a beach and you want to get to this island. The island is where all the fantasies come true. And if you could see the island, you would say, that's the direction I need to go. Problem is, from where you're standing, you can't see where the island is. You just think this island exists.
So you just got to move.
So you got to go, you got to get in the boat and start paddling. And then as you go, you'll realize, hey, actually, I see it. It's over there. And he's like, it's much easier to move a boat when you actually have some momentum. You can just put your paddle in the water and you'll actually turn and you'll start going in the new direction. And that's literally what happened in my life. So I give him credit for that. But I remember we were living pretty frugally.
Frugal. You're frugal.
We were frugal. And you're Mr. Frugal.
I am.
And so I want to get into that. I remember one time the way we were living, it was like kind of embarrassing. It was three of us in a one bedroom apartment in Colorado. And everything we would need, we would buy and return. So it's like, hey, we need a camera for this photo shoot to take our menu pictures.
I can still tell you,
yeah, it's like Best Buy 14-day policy, but you don't need this. And, you know, so we would go buy this DSLR camera and return it 14 days later 10 times. And I remember we would sleep on air mattresses, and we knew that Target had a 90-day return policy on air mattresses. So I remember going and returning my air mattress, so embarrassing, of like, damn, I'm this poor that I'm just like.
But were your parents poor or were they frugal?
We were like middle class.
Just normal.
It was just that I couldn't go to them with an ask. Because when you go with an ask, you got to have a little – it's like going to a bank. It's like you got to have a down payment of some kind of success or momentum.
No, I feel you.
At this point, I didn't feel like I had my down payment of I know what I'm doing. Look, it's working. Just give me a little money. This was like, hey, I'm taking a leap of faith. You already gave me a little money. I need to stretch that dollar because I don't know if there is another dollar after this. Did you have any sort of – when you were living frugal, did you have any moments like that were the sort of
– No. I grew up kind of poor. Then my parents started a thing that like made a pretty good living for them. And they paid my high school tuition. And I got a car that was $5,000, an F-150 truck. But it's not like I was like pulled up from my bootstraps, like from nothing.
Right.
But I've never – the $1,000 gift that I got from graduating college was the most money that they've ever – and that to me was like $1,000. Yeah, no, it was so. And then they gave me like a credit card that had like a $500 limit on it. Like they're like, here's this for emergencies. And I remember I cut it up right when I got here. I was like, I'm doing this. I was like, I'm going on the. I'm literally gonna be homeless before I ever ask for help.
And so you lived pretty like a Spartan lifestyle for a while when you were starting up the hustle.
I loved it.
Tell us about that, because I think people got to know what it takes. Sometimes you don't have to sacrifice, but there are sometimes situations where before it builds up and gets big, you know, you gotta live that Spartan lifestyle. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I do well now, but people are like, yo, you know, it's only been, our company just turned 3 years old the other day. It's only been 3 years and you're doing good. And I was like, well, I've been grinding since like taking risks since like 16, 17, 18. And up until a few years ago, like I didn't have any money. And so for the longest time in San Francisco, I had a $600 rent maybe. And I did that because I was able to scrape together some money after selling something. And I rented a 4-bedroom house. I furnished the whole place with used or free furniture on Craigslist. And then I rented it out to people. like the other three bedrooms, and that ultimately paid for my rent, which means that on just living expenses, I was able to only spend about $1,000 a month. Hmm. And so because of that, the first couple of years, my W-2 income was only about $15,000.
And so that was the first couple of years of the hustle.
Yeah.
And then let's give people a sense of the numbers today. You don't have to say the specifics, but you know, what should we be thinking about when we think, you know, how's the hustle doing?
Yeah,
how are
so
you doing?
Our business is very profitable. It makes 8 figures in revenue, really fat margins. My goal is to get it to $100 million in revenue by 2025, and I think we'll get there. So it potentially may not be Uber, but it'll be a nice-sized business. It'll be a $100 million business. Companies like ours could probably sell for any in the huge number, the huge range of $20 to $60 million, and we haven't taken any venture capital.
Right. And so you raised money, but you raised it sort of from the Rolodex in a way.
Yeah, but they weren't in the Rolodex at the time. Tim Ferriss was like lived on the block from me, and I became friends with him that way. So he ended up investing. The founders of Bleacher Report, the founders of NerdWallet, and loads of other people just like that, like 36 people. Scott Belsky, one of the early Uber guys, loads of people like that all collectively put in some sum between $20,000 and $100,000 for Meet Sethi. And collectively, we raised about $1 million.
And then you also raised from the community.
Yeah. So what we did, the hustle started as a conference, a conference with a newsletter. And I realized the newsletter could be a way bigger business. But then I realized the newsletter could actually lead to an even bigger business. But in the meantime, let's use this newsletter to make profits. And once we hit 200,000 users, we said, we always got emails of people wanting to invest. And we go, let's just let anyone invest. And so I thought that we would get $150,000 in 90 days. We ended up getting close to $350,000 in 48 hours.
Wow. All right, ladies and gents, if you want to make that first million, you have got to be organized. Our sponsor, Monday.com, is back to get you there with a weekly dose of the Monday.com motivation. You know, keeping a clean desk, making to-do lists, and using a calendar, those aren't just things that adults do. They're things that wildly successful teams do to hit their goals. In other words, being organized makes achieving your dream of swimming in that money vault that much closer. Visit Monday.com/pod/million. That's right, two backslashes. Monday.com/pod/million to get 10% off of Monday.com, and you can use their customizable templates that will help you get organized. It'll increase your workflow, it'll manage your workload, and get you one step closer to hit your goals.
And so we raised a little bit of money from our users as well. Looking back, logistically speaking, I didn't need any of that money.
Right.
We've always been profitable. It's huge cash flows, but Tim Ferriss gave me money. Now he's my friend, and I could text him and ask for advice, and that's right. Kind of like a cool trade-off.
Right. And with the community money, was that worth it? Because most people don't do that. Because there's
looking back, no.
Issues.
It was not worth it.
Why do you say that?
I have grown to be much more private than I was in the past, and I hate having people that know my business.
Gotcha. And just a second on the origin of the hustle and the Hustle Con, the conference, really, because it started as a conference before it was a newsletter.
Yeah.
And it started before you. Somebody else started HustleCon.
I randomly met Eric Bond and Elizabeth Yin, and these folks are successful entrepreneurs. Eric had a business called Beat the GMAT that he sold for, I don't know how much, but if I had to guess, 8 figures. Elizabeth Yin had another business called LaunchBit that had a nice exit. And so I met a guy who introduced me to them, and we just became friends. And I had like a really small exit in 2012 or 13. And I emailed Eric. I go, what do I do now? And he said, I got this thing I put on. I put on this thing called HustleCon. It was kind of like a conference, but in reality, it was like a meetup. And like 100 people came. It made like $4,000 or I forget, some number like that. It's just basically a website and an email list of 200 or 300 people. Do you want it? Just do something with it and give me like 10% of the profit. Mm-hmm. I said, in. So I relaunched HustleCon on June 1st of 2014, hosted that conference 6 weeks later, and it made like 60 G's. And the whole idea behind it was, I'm not trying to make money. I'm just trying to meet interesting people. And so I would cold email all of these speakers, and I would say like, hey, do you want to speak? These other 15 speakers are coming. And of course, so they hadn't.
Right.
They weren't coming. And they would say yes, and then I would go to the other 15 and be like, hey, I would do the same shtick with them. And they all started coming, and then I became friends with them. And they would teach me stuff, and I would learn stuff just hanging out with them. I'd be like, hey, I need to come by your office so we could talk about the talk.
Right.
But I talked about the talk for 10 minutes, and the next 50 minutes, I just would ask them questions. And so I hosted this event, and the way in which I made it popular was by doing email marketing. And I knew that email marketing was effective because of just like studying it and teaching myself how to be a copywriter. And so that first event in 6 weeks made about 60 Gs, and I only spent $8,000 or some low number like that on the event. So I was like, oh, that's cool. So I took that money, and actually for 6 months, I drove my motorcycle around the country and camped and hung out. And then during that trip, I was like, let's do this again. The next time, this time was 80 days. That's when I met, that's when I met you. Mm-hmm. That event did about $250,000 in revenue on 30 or 20,000 in expenses. And then it was like, okay, this is cool, but I don't want to run a conference forever. I had just read the biography of Ted Turner, the guy who started CNN. I was like, that guy is Southern. I'm kind of Southern. He like is kind of wild like I am. I could do that. I'm already doing that, kind of. Like, I could start a media company. And so that's when we said, let's do a media company. And then the first 6 months of The Hustle, which started in 2015, it was just a blog.
Yeah, but I remember that. It was you were just telling really great stories, but it was like long form
blog stuff, and I would just blog about like funny stuff or interesting stuff, like taking LSD or living on Soylent for 30 days.
Right.
Just stuff like that, and it got loads of traffic, but it was clear that wouldn't be a huge business. So we relaunched on April 19th of 2016, so that's why I say we're about 3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we decided, let's go all in on email, let's build this whole thing on email. And then it became very clear that if you study the history of Groupon, of Daily Candy, of Thrillist. People may not even know what the last two are. But anyway, I was like, man, some of these like billion-dollar companies all started with an email list. Like, let's do that. Let's build up this huge email list and then start creating more products and use that as a distribution channel. And I think we could build a billion-dollar company that way. And that was the idea.
And I remember pretty early on, there was a temptation from, not even really, you didn't seem tempted, but other people were tempted to say, jump on Facebook, jump on video, jump on this trend, Snapchat. You know?
I knew from day one that would be a horrible idea. It's like I've always wanted to be independent, and I felt that building an audience on the back of Facebook was like building a business in a rented apartment where the landlord raises the price every quarter. It's like, that's a horrible idea. And
right.
So I called my email list my pirate ship, and every subscriber was a little bit of wind in our sails.
Right.
Because, like I said, I'm kind of a simpleton. I'm a simple guy. And if you look at like the economics of like building something on Facebook or someone else's platform, you're like, so where's the profit come from? Well, if you do this, like, I don't understand that. That doesn't really make
it's
sense.
Too fancy for me.
Yeah, it's like that does not make sense to me, and I don't want to do that. And so we didn't.
And I think that's paid off because now you have. I mean, this got to be one of the biggest daily emails in the world.
Yeah, I think so. I think we got to be up there. I only know of maybe two or three people that can compete.
And who's that? Who can compete?
There's the Skim. Yeah. I mean, they claim to have 6 or 7 or 8 million. They're pretty big. And then there's maybe a handful of one-off things that aren't confirmed, but I would guess.
And when you were doing this and it started to make money, that was also pretty counterintuitive. I mean, unless you really knew the email game.
Which I didn't. By the way, I knew nothing. Like, up until, I didn't know anything. I didn't know what like basic words were, like an RFP or, I mean, I knew nothing.
Right.
I didn't know what CPM meant. I didn't know how like to. I was doing our accounting. I didn't know the difference between cash flow and revenue. Like I didn't know anything.
And do you know things now, or you just hired people who know things?
I know a lot of things. Yeah. Yeah. I do. I know how to read a balance sheet and do a P&L statement. I know how to make money. I don't know I don't know how to code. I cannot code at all. And we have a tech team, a nice sized tech team, and we built all of our own custom technology. I'm really good at being like, what's the simplest solution? Like, what need should exist? And then I'm like, hey guys, can you like, it would be cool if this existed. Do you know how to make that happen? And they would just say, yeah. I'm like, all right, great. Show me in a week and let's see.
Right. And what was the first milestone where you were like, holy shit, this thing's actually, not just it's working, but this thing's actually going to be really big.
Well, the first week of our existence, we got 1 million people coming to the website.
Hmm.
And I was like, that's awesome. That is great. And we got on the front page of Reddit, and we had like 2,000 or 3,000 concurrent users on real-time analytics, Google Analytics. And I was like, sick. That's awesome.
How good is it to watch the real-time?
It's addicting. It's addicting. It's hugely addicting. And then I was like, this cannot be big. I thought that, and someone once told me, a big CEO of a huge media company that you know of told me, this business will never make more than $2 million a year. We could do that in a month now.
And what was that person wrong about? What didn't they get?
They were a New York media person who was kind of fancy, and they're like, email is such a small thing, like an email newsletter, like you don't even have a website. Like there's no way advertisers are going to want that. And I'm like, well, but if you think about it, if you just look at how much they're going to pay per click on all these other platforms, who cares if it's on your email or on a website, or like, does it matter? As long as they get like traffic to their stuff, like who cares? And it's like, well, it doesn't work like that. I was like, okay, well, and so I kind of believed him. I didn't think that it would work. And then once we started growing, I was like, oh, this is crazy. And then it wasn't until like 6 months ago where I was like, man, there's like a path to make like literally $100 million a year in revenue on this. I kind of knew a little bit that it could be big. Daily Candy, the company that I modeled us mm-hmm. after early on, they claimed to have $25 million in revenue and $10 million in net income a year. So I was like, well, if we just do that, that might happen.
And they're still around. They're doing
well.
They
sold for $125 million to Comcast, and then Comcast screwed it up and shut them down.
Gotcha. Okay. And so let's play a little game called Remake My First Million. If you had to remake $1 million, so I take away your business as it is today, you can't do that again. This exact business, you can't do it again. You're 21 years old, though, so I give you back that youthful energy and time. What would you work on? What would you try to do? Let's say you don't have capital, you don't have network, you don't have a lot of those pieces. You're you, but you're 21. What would you do again? Or what would you do differently this time?
If I was 21, 22, I would try to get a quick win and try to get like a couple hundred thousand or maybe $1 million in my bank by like starting a business that made $100,000 a month and would try to sell it and own all of it. And I think that is significantly more possible than most people think.
So I'm 21. I'm listening to this. I say, all right, that sounds pretty good. Be more specific. What do you mean? What sorts of ideas?
Well, if they're 21
that?
Today, start blogging. And when I say start blogging, I would say learn one new interesting thing each week and then just blog about what you learned. Do that every single day, every week for a year. Try to get 2,000 to 3,000 people a day coming to your site through search. The way you find out what to write about is you go to hrefs.com and you buy a subscription, and that will teach you what to write because it will tell you what people are searching for. Try to rank for those words, build up an email list of 5,000 people, and then create a course and sell it to them.
I like it. And I like the looking up the keywords. It's like having the answers to the test. It's like, here's what people want to know.
Yeah, just answer it.
Just answer it.
And answer it by learning on your own and then just teaching people what you learn.
There's two ways to teach or to create content. One is to be the expert, and the other way is to be the curious novice. And so
the second one 100% works.
Right. A lot of people count themselves out because they just assume I'm not the expert. But in reality,
you only need to be one step above.
Great.
Yeah, you just got to be one step in front of your audience, and that one step could be you just read a book over the weekend.
Right.
So if I was a 21-year-old kid, what I would do is go on Yelp, pick a very specific niche like irrigation services, scaffolding rental, lawn cutting service. Pick some niche in a town like Nashville, Denver, something like that, and try to start a business that beats all the other people on Yelp. I'm quite obsessed with the idea of consolidating local businesses. Boring stuff, right?
Well, it's not boring. It's like people don't like to hear the obvious, and it's almost the obvious as far as the basics.
Dude, because people are super fancy, man. Like me and Ramon, him and I have started or funded like 5 or 6 companies that collectively make $10 million or something like that. And it's like the most simple shit on earth. And if I told you that this company makes this much money, you'd be like, what? That is so stupid. Ramon owns this one that I participate on a little bit as well that sells dog ramps.
What's a dog ramp?
A dog ramp is when you have a dash hound. Or what kind of dog do you have? Like a Chihuahua?
I have a Maltipoo. He said it was for wiener dogs.
Yeah. That's a dash hound.
Oh, okay. That's the fancy word for
sausage dog. Yeah, wiener dog. When you have these small dogs and they want to get on your bed, they can't get up. So it's just like all it is a piece of wood and it flips up. So like a ramp, like a miniature handicap ramp, and your right. dog can get up there. And that makes sometimes tens of thousands of dollars a day.
And why are people scared of these businesses? Or do they just assume it can't be, you know, can't be that big?
Here's why. I think about this all the time because I struggle with my team. They don't understand leverage. So they think that in order to make, let's say, $1 million, you have to work an equivalent amount of hours that in their head they think is $1 million. Or you have to have an idea that is the equivalent of $1 million idea.
Right.
When in reality, you could just have really good execution, which is not tied to the amount of time in which you spend on something, you could have pretty good execution, like 100% effort for a short amount of time. And that, if you leverage it correctly, it creates significant amounts of value. And so they overthink stuff. Mm-hmm. Also, I think they feel guilty. It's like...
Guilty how?
Like, the way I compare it is like when your mom makes a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, it always tastes better than when you do it because you see how simple it is. And you're like, oh, this like isn't that... this is like... It's got to be way better. Like, the other people must do it way different because this isn't that... Like, this can't be that easy, right. Can it? And that's kind of like the idea. And people like overthink stuff. I also think that we hang out with a lot of high IQ people. And I think the smarter you are, the more... disadvantaged you are at some of these
money.
At some of these like simple things. And it's also fear,
right?
People are afraid.
These PB&J businesses are can be great businesses if you apply leverage, and that's sort of the difference, where your same hot dog stand idea could have been a big business if you had just applied more leverage, more stands, more locations, franchised it out.
And the way you create leverage is like you just have to like set things up in a very particular way. So like you just hire key people, or you use the internet. And you realize, well, I can do the same thing, but I just put 2 zeros on the back of my ad spend. It's like, wow, I'm not doing any extra effort, but I'm getting like 10 times the amount of money. Right. And that,
I think you had a business that you bought a SaaS company, or for those.
Yeah, so Ramon and I also own a SaaS company. It's like a $30,000 a month SaaS business.
And all you did was raise the prices. Is that correct?
Yeah, all we did so far was just went in and changed a 3 to like a 6, and that was it. That's all we did.
You're like, I can't code, but even I know how to do this.
Yeah, most people don't price their stuff effectively. We bought a company. Literally all that was done was double the price, and revenue doubled. Same amount of people sign up every day. It's super simple.
I love it. This is why I call you the Lord of the Flies, man. You would find the way to make the money.
And what I would like to do is buy more software companies and 10x the price. I think that that's possible as well.
So you have all these experiments in your head, but one experiment you guys just launched is Trends, and I want to hear about it because I like Trends, but I don't fully get Trends.
Yeah, a lot of people
tell me about it.
A lot of people who haven't experienced it, I don't think are going to get it yet, and that's because
What is it?
Yeah, so basically the idea is it's a premium publication, a paid publication, a paid weekly email, and we have hired a team of analysts as well as myself, and we crawl the web and look at millions of bits of data. And we also talk to people like you and other experts, and we just explore various industries, and we do deconstructing of various businesses, and we just show like where are cool opportunities and where's the white space in loads of different industries.
So it's, if I'm somebody who is looking for my next opportunity or my next idea.
The way that we explain it is like, look, if you start a company, you can make it win, or at least be mildly successful with enough effort. Like you could, if you like are willing to spend 20 years on something, you could probably get a little bit of success out of it. But if you start something on a small ripple that can eventually become a wave or a tsunami, like it's just gonna, the products will get pulled out of you. Like it's just gonna push you down this hill, and life will be a lot better. So it's just like, let's explore some of these waves while they're still kind of small and what they're doing.
Gotcha. So you guys are trend spotting early, these business opportunities.
As well as looking at interesting companies and saying like, well, here's how they work. What if you applied that to this thing? So like we interviewed the guy who started 1-800-GOT-JUNK, Brian, and he said, yeah, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, here's how it works. Here's the economics. We're like, oh, that's amazing. We're like, where else can this work? And he goes, local irrigation services. And we go, awesome.
Thank you.
We went and interviewed a bunch of people and we got the data and we chose, all right, this is like a cool idea.
Nice. And so if Trends works, the hustle becomes this thing that it's got the daily newsletter. We tell you what's going on. You got Trends, which tells you about the big opportunities that are coming.
I'm trying to steal SoftBank's playbook. So in the late 80s, early 90s, Masa Son, he started what was called basically the PC magazine of Japan. He started a publication, started a conference.
And that's a good example, right? PCs was the wave. And
yeah.
He started the magazine. Just
started
the
magazine.
The
then he started the conference, which is now called CES. Mm-hmm. And then
he created CES?
He bought it.
Okay.
He bought it with the profits from the publication. And then he was also selling software. And then he started investing in the companies that he saw that were advertising with him. So I just want to do that same thing because I think working at SoftBank would be a really cool job.
Nice. Going after SoftBank.
Well,
you picked the big blue whale.
It seems like you like see his life. You're like, oh man, he gets to hang out with cool people. He gets to invest his money. Like, let's just do that.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Okay, so when you think about like when somebody's listening to this podcast, let's talk about the podcast for a second because this is a new product essentially that is being published on The Hustle, by The Hustle.
Yeah, hopefully there's 100,000 people listening to this right now that came from our email list.
If you're listening to this and you're one of the 100,000, just tweet at Sam so that he knows you're listening. All right, so why do a podcast? I guess, why didn't you do a podcast earlier is a better question.
Because I didn't know anyone that could do it well. And you and I shoot the shit all the time. You're very successful. You're amazing at asking certain questions. You're also amazing at like saying these weird phrases. Like when you were just talking about your father and talking about like motion versus direction. And so when you said you were going to do a podcast, I was like, oh, let's see if we could partner with him. And we got to do that. I also think that podcasts in general aren't a horrible business if that's your only stream of revenue. Right. But since we have all this other stuff, it's like, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah. It's just sort of, it's found money on top of the existing audience that you have today.
Yeah.
And I think that the good thing about what you guys do is that I think you guys capture just a fraction of the value you create. So giving people the news every morning in a super simple, digestible way, and then you capture, you know, it's free for them, and you capture just a tiny amount of that value on advertising.
Yeah, so with Trends, we're going to be capturing a little bit more. And this is now another component that we can actually get for free and capture a little bit of the value. Right. And hopefully people will sign up for, maybe 3% of people listening will sign up for our paid services.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. And so I want to close it out. I want to do bonus segment about money.
Money.
Okay, this is the money round. I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions related to money, and you're going to tell us about them. How much money were you making at age 21, 25, and I usually say 30, but you're 29, so we'll do 29. So 21, 25, 29.
21. I joined a company after we had a little exit. My salary was $50,000 to $60,000 a year with a bonus that was nice-sized. I was able to save $25,000 with that salary in San Francisco.
You saved $25,000 on a $50,000 salary? $50,000, $60,000 salary? Plus bonus?
Yeah, plus bonuses. Okay. I think my bonuses maybe came out to be like $80,000, like total compensation.
Okay, gotcha. That's good. And 25?
Lower, because I started the company when I was 25. The conference made $60,000, about $50,000 in profit. The second conference made some number of around $200,000 in profit. That all stayed in the business other than a draw I did of $2,000 a month.
And then 29, your company's doing really well now. What do you pay yourself?
I pay myself six figures. I pay myself somewhere in between six and seven figures, below seven figures, above six figures. I didn't pay myself six figures from the company until last year. For a long time, it ramped up from like 40 to 60 to 100. And then I started giving myself meaningful bonuses based off performance. I make more income from my investments. So selling other businesses, rental income, things like that. I make more money that way.
And so last question, a lot of people have a number in mind. This is the number that they want, the number where they feel like they've hit it. They've made it. As of right, and the number can move. I think when people hit their number, they make a new number. But right now, what's your number?
I think that an old guy who I love, Stuart Alsop, I don't know if you know him. He's a good friend, but he's a big-time investor. He was Twitch's seed investor.
Does he like being called an old guy who you love?
No, but he's like 70 years old. I just like calling him that. I don't know. He's a good guy. He told me that the first unit you make makes life different. And I go, what's a unit? And he goes, 10 million. He goes, you get one unit, that's when life changes. So one unit where your liquid is a big deal. It goes probably 10, and then 100 is like you're set forever. 10 is like be cool and you're fine.
Right. Don't go Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
And you're fine.
Yeah. Like 100 is you're set. 10 is like life is never going to be the same, but you could still ruin it if you like really do something bad.
So that's your number right now, one unit.
A unit, getting liquid. That said, I don't think I'll be happier with it. I know I won't be happier with that, right? You're not going to be happier with $10 million, I don't think.
I think I would be. I think it's not so much happier. I think happier is kind of the wrong word.
The money won't make you happy. It's the fact that you did it.
The fact that I did it, as well as the lifestyle. So I think money, I have this thing that money is just stored time. So when I give you money, I'd like to unlock some of your time to go do something for me. And when you give me money, it's because you want some of my time. And that's sort of how money works. Money is just time frozen into a piece of paper. And when you give it to somebody else, it thaws out, you get their time. And so the thing, you know, if I had a unit that would make sure that I'm the one unlocking other people's time, nobody's really unlocking my time unless I'm choosing to do so.
Yeah, you could just do that with a lot less money than you think. I choose to work. I could not work. I do it because I like it.
As long as it's a choice. What I'm saying is that most people, and I put myself in this bucket right now, I don't dictate how I spend every hour of my day. It's not all my choice. There are several things that are things that I don't want to be doing with my time. So the day that I can do sort of what I want, when I want, where I want, the way I want, that will be sort of the ultimate freedom.
And I agree with you.
I don't
my
know if money unlocks
is, it'll
that.
Be, it could be lower. It's a lower number than you think.
What's the number?
It depends on how much you spend. But like, I don't spend a lot of money. I could say fuck you to everyone and bounce and be fine.
I'm a spender. That's the problem.
Man, maybe when I hit 100 grand, I'm like, 100 grand liquid, I was like, that's fuck you money. But I was willing to say fuck you to...
Yeah, you live a fuck me lifestyle and you can have fuck you money
yeah,
at 100K.
I'm like, yeah, that's exactly right. If you're willing to say fuck you even at 10,000 or 1,000, 100 grand liquid made a difference.
Yeah.
That's the number I'll give you. 100 grand liquid made a difference and I was willing to say fuck off.
Yeah. You know, I like this segment, the money round, because money's this weird taboo thing. I remember when you messaged me on Facebook once and you were like, you were just like, how much you make? And I was like, you know, we knew each other, but like we hadn't talked about it before.
No, amongst most my close friends, I'm very open. I'll be like, here's how much cash I have.
Right. And you asked me all these questions and I was like, this is kind of cool. Cause I was like, at first I just admired the balls of, hey, you know, just to ask. But the second thing was, I was like, this is how we can kind of help each other get ahead is information. Can we unlock some information so that you understand how people are playing this game? Because the pie is very, very big. And so the weird
thing, it's not a zero sum game. A lot of people think that like, if I make money, that means I took it from someone. It's like, no, that's not exactly how it works. Like if I create a piece of art, I didn't take this from anyone. I just created this valuable thing that someone's going to give me something for.
Right. And even if you are taking money from somebody else, there's so many players in the game.
Yeah, as long as yeah. Like we can all win. And so whenever I ask people, it's never out of jealousy of like, I wish I was lower than, or I wish I was bigger than, I do wish I have more than what I have sometimes, but it's not of like, I want you to be lower than me. It's like, oh man, what could you teach me?
Right. Yeah, and I've learned from you and you've learned from me in that regard. So, all right, Sam, where can people find you aside from subscribing to The Hustle?
Subscribe to The Hustle.
Thehustle.co.
Yeah, go to trends.co, trends.co, sign up.
What about you personally? Where do they find
me? Me personally, don't email me because I won't reply more likely than not, but tweet at me and I will reply, The Sam Parr.
Awesome. Thanks, Sam, so much. Great episode. We're going to do a Spartan race tomorrow. So.
Yeah, we're running 8.5 miles. I don't know if we're going to run, but we're walking 8.5 miles.
Yeah. We're getting a long stroll tomorrow. All right. Good stuff, man. Great talking to you.